Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
Well, we cover some auction cars and Gone in 60 Seconds and a Ferrari that was sold for a very cheap price and now is going to get a very hefty price, along with our general musings and philosophies. First, there's Matt with Dodge.
Yeah, you know, we all know that Dodge means horsepower and muscle, but did you know that J.D. Power has ranked Dodge number one for initial quality? And you know, J.D. Power also named them the automotive company for best driver appeal for mass market brands. So they're number one in initial quality and appeal in the same year. You know, this is the first time a domestic automotive brand ran away with both awards in the same year. And with enough style, horsepower, and performance to make your muscle car dreams come true, it's no wonder that Dodge is sweeping all of these awards. Well, listen, there's never been a better time now to join the Brotherhood of Muscle. So see your local Dodge dealer today or visit Dodge.com.
Just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. A new year of Adam's Monthly Nut hath begun. We kick off 2021 with a bang, with products like a bottle of Promescent Delay Spray to keep you going all year long, a collapsible water bowl to cure feminine canine hydration syndrome anywhere it strikes, a secret Santa gift, because let's be honest, we got Corolla gifts galore at the warehouse, and a digital download of the first three glorious years of the ACE Awards. The year of the devil is behind us. Get ready for an all-new year of Adam's Monthly Nut.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. The church is going to mend it. Get it on and welcome to CarCast. Madam Carolla, it's Matt the Motorator, DeAndrea, over there.
Hello, how you doing?
Doing well with my spirited driving around town.
Yeah. How do you like rowing those gears all the time now?
I'm driving the 50th anniversary, I guess, 370Z, autographed by Pete Brock on the glove box. Well, yeah. Really the dashboard. Glove boxes are getting so low now that you got to hit the dash.
And it all looks
it.
Like one piece.
Yeah. Everyone that gets in the car is always like, who's that? I'm like, Pete Brock. And they go, oh.
No, they don't want a follow-up question. They don't have a follow-up question.
I try to tell
question.
Them about BRE and the Daytona Shelby and falls
they immediately
on
regret asking as soon as you're like, ask Pete Brock. Because they know that you're going to tell a story. Because why would you sign it if it wasn't a story?
Yeah.
And who do they think signed it? Tom Cruise?
People should be more into things. I agree. Or at least more into shit I'm into. I drive around. I have this habit. I've always been this way. I don't like eating or drinking things out of I don't like drinking a beer out of a plastic cup. You know, like I take a glass, I wet it down, I put it in the freezer, and then I'll crack the beer and dump it into the frosty glass cup because I just like it better that way. I feel like, I don't know if it's 10% or 35%, but holding a cold glass versus a plastic cup that's kind of collapsing in your hand. I mean, if you want to know the extreme, and I feel the same way with utensils and plates. Like, I don't, you know, when people do the takeout and they get the steakhouse brought home, I don't want to eat it out of the fucking box with a spork. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of ruined. And if you conduct this little thought experiment, I think you'll understand. Sometimes, and it's happened to me before, where you get stuck in a bad hotel and you got your bottle of wine and you finished a couple of shows, you're going to watch some Sports Center and try to escape life. And you realize there's nothing in that room except for a ceramic mug. And it's like, okay, now you have to drink wine out of a ceramic mug.
Yeah.
And everyone would sign off on the fact that that sucks.
Yeah.
So if that sucks, then there's versions of that. And so for me, I don't like drinking coffee out of the plastic travel thing. I don't like the flip top. I don't like the plastic. I don't like sucking. I like coffee out of a mug.
Yeah.
And so what I do is I don't have a travel mug. I leave with my mug and I drive with my mug. And when you're driving a big car that's an automatic, you can A, set the mug on the armrest.
Right.
When you get into the car or even on the dash, it'll be flat. And then when you're driving, you just put it and drive and you hold your mug.
Just hold it and drink it, yeah.
But when you're driving a stick and there's nowhere to set the there's no flat surface on that car.
Right.
So you have to hold the mug the entire time and then attempt to drive with your knee.
Well, they don't want you to have the mug.
Well, I do. This is the mug I drove here with.
Yeah.
Okay. And no problemo.
Okay. Yeah. Have you tried playing with, when you're not drinking coffee while driving, you can turn the rev matching on and off. So
yeah.
I like to hit a few turns with it on and then hit a few turns off to see how I compare to the car.
Yeah, I've been doing a little bit of that. I've been, you know, one thing you do kind of miss when you're not driving the big truckster, it's just like pulling in and out of the garage or the parking space or whatever. It's so much smaller. It's so much easier to sort of, so much easier to maneuver. And again, other than like not a lot of space inside the car, even just driving the car, my seat's all the way back. I got it leaned back. My knees are still good and bent. I drove Natalia and three of her friends around the other night. So we packed five people into the car.
Oh.
And went on a little bonsai run.
It's interesting because you're right. The small cars are fun because they're easy, certainly easy to park. And in LA where everything's a compact spot, Whole Foods, whatever, Trader Joe's. But I always think about ground clearance.
Yeah.
You know, because I never want to scrape anything. I don't want to scrape the nose. I don't want to do anything.
Yeah.
You know, especially with all the press cars.
Yeah.
It's always ground clearance.
Yeah. The good news with this car is it has like the plastic sweep in the front. So it makes kind of that low pitch thing versus the metal.
Yeah.
But there's always, I literally pulled out of my driveway today. I pulled in my driveway 20 minutes ago. It has a steep incline on it, and there's always witnesses. There's always that couple that's standing across the street, and they're just looking at you.
I like to stop and look. I like to stop and make sure,
and then,
like, give you the shame look. Like, yeah, I know what you're doing.
I got a little scrapage going on, but I'm fine.
All right, so we should order one of those plastic pieces or a backup piece. We all know that Dodge means horsepower and muscle, but did you know that J.D. Power has ranked number one ranked Dodge for number one for initial quality. They also named Dodge the automotive company with best driver appeal for mass market brands. So there's never been a better time now to join the Brotherhood of Muscle. See your local Dodge dealer today or visit Dodge.com.
All right. So, I'm driving around the Z. The Z's nice. It works. You know, even manual shift cars that are modern, the clutch is so much easier. The shifting is so much more positive. The power steering, you know, it's not your dad's manual shift where it was really a handful.
And it shifts really easily. Like, it's just, you know, one finger, two fingers, you can move that
thing around. It shifts nicely. It's fun. It's fun to, when you're, you know, transitioning from one freeway to the other freeway and you're on that big sweeping ramp, to kind of drop it down a gear and get into it a little bit. It's been fun kind of zipping around. I'm not sure. I figured out how to program the clock on the dash.
Okay.
You'd be so proud of me. I figured out, I was setting the clock on the radio, but the one that's up on the tri-cluster on top of the dash, that clock just remained the same. But I figured out how to set that bad boy. I don't know if I can do the phone over the thing. I don't know if I have to sync it up, or I don't even know if it has that capability.
Well, in that car, it it probably has Bluetooth, if anything, although Bluetooth is just kind of antiquated now. I don't think it has CarPlay, so there's no like plug it in and have the, you know, the apps on the screen or anything. The most it would do is just would be Bluetooth.
Well, I'm going to have to talk to Gary about that because he's kind of the expert at that. Yeah, you kind of forget how used to driving and just plugging your phone in and talking to everyone in stereo is. At some point, you realize, like, when you put the person on the speaker, but you got the thing on its mount on the dash, and then that car makes a little bit of noise when you drive it. Can't hear that well through the speaker, so you ended up putting in the earbud, and that's kind of do it. Now, you can plug it in, and it'll go to, like, auxiliary or something, but it's
I think you can play music or something off of it, but I don't know if it plugs in and the phone will work, which is interesting, though, because I oftentimes find that with the louder cars, I just put the earbuds. I just put the earbuds in.
Or something. So it's a good car. It drives nice. It it's a little bit kind of cool. Like, people look at you a little bit and go, "Hey, look at you." You know,
I mean, it's fun to tool around in a sports car every once in a while. You know, especially if you've been, you know, living a year or longer in a big SUV. Especially recently, the Infiniti, the QX80 is a big SUV.
It's really big. Oh man,
70Z on the roof of that thing.
No, you really realize when you pull into the garage in the Infiniti, you got to get the nose right up against the wall, or the garage door won't close. And the one thing I don't miss is all the goddamn beepers and buzzers, like all the beep, 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 beep. It's like that car just goes nuts the second you get near anything. But there is an element where you get used to driving a car that tells you when you're drifting out of your lane, or tells you when you're getting too close, or starts applying the brake or steering the car. It kind of does everything for you. And then you get in a car that does nothing, but you're kind of in that mode where, like, it'll tell me if I'm getting too close to another car.
Yeah.
But you have to keep in mind, like, you got to drive that car. You will rear end somebody. The Infiniti, you won't rear end somebody on the freeway because it will stop for you.
It'll probably do more than that. It'll stop, it'll beep, it'll yell at you. It's interesting you bring that up because we were talking earlier this week. Gilbert and I were talking about, I know you've been teaching Sonny and Natalia to drive. And on his property, he teaches his son Gage, they're the same age, they're 14. And I was like, what do you teach
them? Both crackerjack athletes.
Yeah, they're both crackerjack athletes. He teaches them on, like, his Willie's Jeep, and then they're going to graduate to, like, his wife's, like, 60s Mercury pickup truck for that reason. It's like, don't rely on all the electronics. Like, just get a very sort of mechanical experience of learning to drive first. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like, that Willie's Jeep does 41 miles an hour, and it's, you know, you have to shift it and you know, like, but on their property, on their ranch, you can do that. But I kind of like the idea of having sort of a very visceral experience as you're learning, and then he's all in on, like, yeah, we're gonna go to Bondurant and do the, you know, the ABS brake check and the skid pad and the, you know, so now you start to know the capabilities of a car. But I kind of feel like when you're learning, you should drive stick and not just hop right into paddle shifters or fully automatic with all the,
well, it's
steering for you, braking for you, parking for you.
I think it's kind of like if you had this wish for your child. This is why I get the big bucks, the analogies, people. Look, your phone has spell check. Everything's going to correct it for you. You're going to have a computer. It's going to fix your grammar. It's going to fix your punctuation. It's going to check your spelling. Like, everything's going to be done for you. But if you had a wish for your child, you'd go, well, I would like you to be able to write in cursive, and I would like you to know how to spell, and I would like you to learn punctuation. You know, not that I learned any of that shit, but what I'm saying is, it's like, I would like you to learn all these things kind of analog, and then you can go to the computer and let the computer do all the work. Like,
yeah.
I would like you to learn how to cook, and then you can order Grubhub.
Right.
But I don't want to start you on Grubhub, because then you'll never learn to cook.
Yeah, and you won't want to. You'd be like, why am I doing all this?
And also, it's much easier to go from the analog car to the digital car that does everything for you versus once you get used to that digital car, the analog is a little builds up bad habits.
Yeah.
Also, though, it is pretty amazing. Driving a stick is pretty amazing in that, like the muscle memory part of driving a stick. I haven't driven a stick shift car outside of a race car in 20 years. I'm trying to, you know, well, I had a Mini Cooper that was, I had a Z and a Mini Cooper that were six speeds or five and six speeds or probably six speeds, probably in the 2003, 2004, like somewhere in there. But it's been 15 years since I've driven a stick, essentially. You just get in the car and drive it. Like, yeah. There's no acclimating. There's no reacclimating. There's no anything. It's just get in the car and drive.
Yeah.
It's all muscle memory. There's no part of me that's even like, what the hell? What's the next thing?
Right.
Like, none of that. It's just the biggest thing I had to remember that is a new thing is in all the cars I've driven in modern times, you put your foot on the brake, you hit the start button. This car, you put your foot on the brake, you have to press
you
in the clutch, and then hit the start button, which I never hit. I always hold it down like it's a starter.
Yeah.
Like it's an old school, I pretend like it's going, na-na-na-na-na-na-na, and I'm holding the button like I'm driving a car from the 20s.
It's interesting because I do remember some early start button cars where There was an action to it.
Like, yes.
There was a little bit of a hold down for it. Like it took – maybe it was programmed that way so you don't just hit it and then it starts. Like you give it 3 seconds.
I'm trying to think. Like I think – like obviously in a race car, all my race cars, there's a button and you don't just hit the button. You hold the button because all that's doing is
– that's just a starter solenoid.
That's just telling the starter to engage. I feel like first gen – button pushing cars was almost the same technology. Like you just had to hold it and start it.
Yeah,
but
you know,
maybe.
If I had to guess, what they were doing was if you just hit it once, it puts into an accessory mode. And then when you hit it or hold it down, it would start it. But now it's all about holding the brake to start it. But if you take your foot off the brake and you hit the starter button, it'll do accessory mode, right? It'll light up the dash, but not start it, right? Because it's all about the brake now.
I, Meekum Kissimmee, no one knows. Meekum's got some big cars going this weekend, as far as I know.
Now, is this weekend when they're also doing the big muscle car collection, Muscle Car City? This guy's 200 cars.
I didn't see that because I'm normally not a big muscle car guy, but they go back to the top, Chris, please. They're doing a Shelby GTR, which I remember when those cars were 150 grand, and I always said, like, they made 34 of them. That always feels like good value. Now they're, I don't know, I think this one's like 1.2 to 1.4, 1.3 to 1.5 or somewhere in there. 1.2 to 1.5. How much rider can I be? I want 1.2 to 1.4, 1.3 to 1.5, but it's 1.2 to 1.5. They get a little happy with these things once in a while, a little pie in the sky. But yeah, these GTRs are these.
It's a GT350R.
Yeah, GT350R. These things are. They made 34 of them. Ken Miles one sold for $4 or $5 million the other month or whenever that was. Mm-hmm. So these things are going to keep going up in value. There's some Cobras. There's some other Shelby Mustangs. There's quite a few interesting cars. There's this Ferrari that's a 340. Click on that one. You know, the thing that's kind of funny about the Ferrari is it's interesting. It's in blue. It's got the blue rims.
But the wire knockoffs in blue. Right? Like the wire wheels of the knockoff?
Yeah. It was a early 50s, 1952 340 America that I think may have raced at Le Mans or something like that. But in the story of the car, they're talking about how cheap it was bought a drag racer, Mike Sanfilippo, purchased a car in 1990 for $200. And then it goes down. It goes in 2006. Tom Shaughnessy or something of San Clemente, California, purchased a car for $27,000. And it's like, well, that's a cool story. But if you want $7 million for the car now, it's kind of bumming me out.
Yeah. Are you buying it from Tom Shaughnessy? Because now you really start to think about his margins. You know, he was like, he was barely in at $27,000. And what's it going to go for? Like, it,
06, 06 is modern times, and it's a Ferrari. So I don't know. I know it was in rough shape, but one guy bought it for $200. The other guy bought it for $26,000, and they're hitting that, like they're highlighting that. Does that? It seems like a weird angle. Does this seem like a weird angle to you?
It is when you're asking for the big dollar, for sure. You know, it's not quite the same story as like Shelby going, who wants to buy one of our cars? We're not using it after race season, because that was, you know, a million years ago. This was $27,000, I don't know, 15 years ago.
Yeah, maybe not quite. Is they don't have an estimate on that car, do they? But like I said, when they do the inquire thing on the estimate, if you look around and you see other cars and the estimate is up to $1.5 million or $2 million or something,
yeah,
and then you look at the car, another car, and it says inquire.
Sure, it's not $28,000.
It's more than
he's looking to make
million,
at least $1,000 on this.
$2 million. One of these things going off. See, so these are big dollar European and American, but this ain't, you know, pony cars. This is Meekum doing big dollar European stuff.
Yeah, we were trying to speculate at one point, like, where is the market in the new car world because of the pandemic? Lower price cars, Honda Civics, are not selling well. Even base model F-150s, not really, but the fully loaded cars are selling, you know, the luxury cars. The $72,000 F-150 is really selling well, but the $31,000 version is not really selling
well.
Does
that have anything to do with the pandemic?
And it is, yeah, because so many small businesses and people that don't have a lot of money are the ones that are suffering the most from it, right? Because if you think about what's being closed down, it's, you know, it's restaurants, it's gyms, it's yoga studios, you know, things like that. And a lot of the guys that have the money have different types of corporations. I don't know how many people we run into, for some reason, that are in some sort of form of insurance.
Right.
They're like, what do you do? Insurance. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I guess those are doing well. So the high dollar cars. So we were, I was thinking about, for some of the auctions that have high volume cars, Meekum, Barrett Jackson, you know, they move hundreds and hundreds of cars, and whatever, 30 of them are their high dollar cars. What about all the other kind of project cars and some lesser expensive muscle cars and a couple, you know, like the, yeah, the Cadillac XLR, convertible hardtop that's coming up at Meekum, you know, for $8,200 or, you know, or $12,000. Like, are those
like the 1999,
yeah,
97
yeah,
or something?
Are those not getting the dollars and the big cars are? Or I kind of wonder what's happening with those types of auctions, right?
Well, I think the big cars are always getting the big bucks because that's just its own yacht crowd who'll always pay money.
Right, right. Gullwing's $1 million, doesn't really matter, pandemic or not, $1 million, right?
Yeah, like, one, two, or three probably. Yeah. And then there are the cars that are kind of the weird cars. I don't know, like you said, the Cadillac or some, I don't know, 928s or certain generation Supras have not really caught on and that kind of stuff. But then there are the ones where people think there's value, like the NSXs and the 240Zs and the E30 M3s,
right,
and certain Mustangs from the past. even from the 80s and 90s. And then, there's like certain cars that are starting to creep up and catch on. And I think people do look at those in terms of their value, or they've been kind of charting those. I'm trying to think of the market. The market that's probably down is the older generation muscle, sometimes Mopar cars. Those things shot up real high and they've kind of evened out. Porsche has always been kind of moving and moving up. Ferrari's definitely down. I mean, Ferrari's been down. Ferrari's, I feel like Ferrari was down. Then I feel like Lamborghini was down. And now I feel like Lamborghini's making its way back up, but Ferrari isn't really making its way back up. I think the first gen Ford GTs are making their way back up. They kind of they were flat for a long time. Then they started to creep up. Then they kind of went flat again for a while, and now they're starting to make their way again.
Yeah. What do you think though about, you know, you go to Bear Jackson Scottsdale and you're there on a Wednesday or on a Thursday, and there's just rows of, I don't know, $28,000 cars, $27,000 cars. Do you think those cars, they're all no reserve, right? So do you think they're all going for 15% less? Do you think they're all selling for $22,000, $17,000? You know, because at night when they roll out the big cars, like you're saying, like we know kind of what's going on there. But I'm just curious, you know, with things like Mecum coming up this weekend and Barrett Jackson Scottsdale event coming up end of March instead of January, it's bumped to end of March.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it's not a bad idea for a lot of people that, you know, have reached out to us and go, hey, where should I start? What should I collect? What should I do? What's a good project? Maybe that Barrett Jackson Wednesday, Thursday auction during the day isn't a bad time to hit it.
You know, I would say anything that's no reserve, especially once you do your homework on what these things are trading for and you know what a deal is, then get in on that shit. I hate to sound like these car expert guys, because I always hate it when someone goes, what car should I be looking at, or what's a good collector car? And they go, well, it's the one you like the most.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what the fuck? Why do we need your expertise if you're telling me the one? I like a Daihatsu Charade, okay, yeah. Dick?
Nobody does.
Now, what
but
should
sure.
I buy?
Yeah.
I'm asking you.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I hope I've been consistent that if anyone ever tells me or asks me, like, what should I be looking at? I'll go, whatever you like. We're the one you'll like the most. Everyone tries to do that car purist bullshit. First off, I like the car that's going to go up in value the most over the next 10 years. How about that?
Yeah.
And that's why I'm asking you, car expert guy. I think if you look at cars, it's kind of like the NSX was several years ago. And it's kind of like the Jag XJ220 kind of is today, or maybe was several years ago. If you find yourself circling back to a car, could be the Jag NSX, maybe a 928S. It's a couple versions of that. Maybe a Mitsubishi Starion or something on a lower pay grade sort of. But if you keep circling back to a car and you keep going, that's a pretty cool car.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty cool car. Like we would do with the Jag 220,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
We go, that's a fucking good looking car. That's a cool piece,
yeah.
you know? And then you start looking at other cars from their era, like, I'm trying to think. The Bugatti, you know, quad turbo, whatever the 6P16 or 1 or whatever it is.
12.
And you start looking at other cars, like sort of in the class, and you go, why is that car 900 grand and that car 400 grand?
Yeah.
Because I think the 400 grand is pretty cool. Like if you keep circling back and you keep saying, I think this car's a pretty cool piece. Chances are, if you're dialed in correctly, it shall be recognized. Like it will start popping up.
Yeah. Other people start to notice it as well. Because you're right. It catches your attention somehow.
Yes.
And you keep going back to it. You keep going back to it.
The speaking of little brother, something that's been bothering me for a while. You can probably find the commercial mix, Pat. I didn't give him a heads up. I'd like to see how he works in a real-time environment. Pepsi's advertising, all the football I watch, I see The Weeknd doing his Pepsi commercial where he's pulling up to the toll bridge and there's a fat guy in the booth and they're basically looking at The Weeknd and it's Pepsi and it's The Weeknd and it's the halftime Super Bowl.
Okay.
Super Bowl halftime show. He's driving a Mercedes 190.
Okay.
And it's like, you do know the 300, the goal winger, is the convertible the 300?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a 300 Roadster, sure.
What the fuck is it a 300 for? It's got a, I think that thing has a, I think it's like a 2.4 liter. Is that a 3 liter in that thing? It's a straight six. Maybe I just think it's a 2.4. I want to know the displacement, Max Zapata. On the 300 Roadster. Anyway, the point is...
the SL,
is,
yeah.
The SL. The fucking Roadster is $1.2 million, but the 190, that's 80 grand.
All right. There he is.
And he's pulling up in the $80,000 Mercedes. That's The Weeknd. Not driving...
Yeah.
The $1.2 million version of the car.
Yeah.
I'm angry.
All right.
I say it's fake. I say the whole thing's...
Wait, you're saying that's not The Weeknd's real car?
That's right.
You're saying he's doing better than...
I'm not even saying he was crossing that bridge. I think they're just filming that shit for a commercial.
That fat guy wasn't really fat.
Well, he was, but he was an actor.
That's true. So it was stunt fat.
This shows me nobody knew anything about cars.
Yeah. It's, you know, they do a...
They pick the weakest, shittiest Mercedes convertible. There's really three to choose from. You got the gold wing.
Yeah.
But that, you wouldn't be able to see The Weeknd's head. Then you got the 300, which you definitely should have picked. And now this. You got a fucking car that I could find for $65,000.
I agree with you. Like, when you're going to commit to using a vintage car, now it matters.
Right.
But if you say, we need something that's convertible, and because the way we're filming it, we want it white or we want it black or we want it red. Like, if those are the parameters, then I get it. You can find almost anything. But you're saying, ooh, we should use a vintage car, right?
Yeah.
Because now we're not really, like, making it a car commercial and it's more of a collectability thing and it's got some style to it. And so we need a vintage car. And then you go, okay, now we should pick the right vintage car. And you go, what's convertible? What do you have? Which is weird because I feel like you can call up some of the companies that place these cars or rent these cars, especially for film and TV production, and go, we need a really badass convertible car. I hate to be the guy that goes, ooh, I've got the 190. I've got the Gullwing, but it costs this much. You know, I've got the 300 SL Roadster for $22,000 a day, or I've got the 190 for only $2,200 a day.
I bet if you want to bring a trailer, Max Zapata, they have that kind of graph sheet, which will tell you like kind of average price.
Yeah.
Or does it tell you average price, or does it just show you the graph? Like, here's the most expensive one sold.
Oh, on, was it Hagerty Price Value?
Well, that one, yeah, that one does too. Bring a trailer. All you have to do is kind of go to the middle of the scattergram and see like where all the dots are, and you go, oh, that's what those things sold for. The difference between the 300 and the 190 is almost $1 million. What the fuck, Weeknd? And by the way, this lets me know the Weeknd knows nothing about Weeknd driving, ironically.
It is a 3 liter.
It's a 3 liter.
It's a 3 liter.
All right. Well, that's why it's the 300, I guess. Yeah. That's healthy displacement for a straight six in the 50s, early 60s. Yeah. Early 60s. Early 50s.
No, it's 50s. Yeah. Because I always think of like a 55, but you're right. The Gullwing was 54 to 57, and Roadster was 57 to 63.
It's a big displacement. Sorry. Show me the scattergram again, Max Bass. So. Looks like the majority of these things were basically in the 80 to $100,000 range. The $90,000 range seems to be about the most on bring a trailer for the 190. And now if you go to the 300 SL, I think you're going to see you're going to go from 90 grand to 1.1 million bucks. So I say that Pepsi commercial's bogus.
I remember your friendly little argument with Leno about how many SLs were made,
mm-hmm.
right? How many were we talking Gullwing specifically? Or
sorry.
Were we talking
You know what? They had 240 horsepower, I think, and maybe that was my 2.4, because we had this argument about 240 versus 220 and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it a horsepower argument or was it a production number argument?
I think we had both.
Yeah, of course.
It was on the stage of the Tonight Show.
Yeah.
It was during rehearsal. You want to know why? Because he drove his Gullwing. He has this pink, red-pink Gullwing with
patina car.
With a meatball on it. And he loves going, I'm a bottle guy in the high desert for 80 grand.
Yeah, you know, 80 grand.
The whole engine was out. We took the engine, you know, put a head gasket on it, put on the dyno, we threw it back in the car. He knows that car's worth 1.3 million bucks or whatever. You never see those cars that aren't restored to the nines.
Yeah.
And Leno has an original, like, driver.
It's interesting.
Anyway, that was in the parking lot.
Yeah.
So when I came in for rehearsal, we started talking about it, and then we started getting into production numbers and horsepower, and then we start arguing. And then whoever's managing the stage or producing the show was like, could we get on with the fucking show part of this thing?
which is great. Actually, I went once with you with it was one of the last Tonight Shows. You were a guest on it again. And I was sitting with you, and Jay came in, and Jay came in, and everybody's immediately talking about cars. And this is a guy that's been on the air for 27 years. And then you hear people in the hallway going, "Where's Jay? Where's Jay?" Somebody goes, "Corolla's here." And he goes, "Oh, all right." So there you go. We should know you're in here talking about cars. Like everything, all timing sort of goes, schedule goes out the door when you're there, when you and Jay. And,
yeah.
And at some point, somebody figured that out because you were doing like a regular, almost like a once a month mm-hmm. thing on the, mm-hmm. on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear people in the hall going, "Corolla's here." And they're like, "Oh, okay. We know what they're doing. They're talking about cars.
I love that about Jay. He knows everything, man. I mean, he is the real goddamn deal with those cars. And he has an incredible memory, so he knows all the names of the old manufacturers and all the guys who put the whole thing together. And he's quite the encyclopedia.
And he's smart to do what you were saying, like get that going, keep the patina and everything, because now there's no mistaking his for anybody else's. There's like you said, they're all restored. You see a beautiful silver. You know, and you go, "Oh, is this so-and-so's car? Is this so-and-so's car?" And they're like, no. We're like, "Oh, I've seen his. It's beautiful. It's just like that." You can never say that about Jay's Gullwing.
No, it's really one of one. It has a weird, almost pinkish color to it. And again, it's got a meatball on it with no number, just a big white circle on the side. All right, let me hit Geico here. Do you own? Do you rent? Well, you probably do one of those things with your home. How about you bundle and save some money when you go with Geico? Go to Geico. Makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around the house. Let's go to geico.com, get a quote, see how much you could be saving when you bundle with geico.com. All right, so let's see. One of the original Eleanor Mustangs is going up. From Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yeah, the Nick Cage version of the movie, right? Which is, that car's been reproduced so many times, but different companies, by collectors. It's interesting because it's a cool-looking car. I always thought the hood was goofy. I just didn't get the hood at all. But I thought it was a cool-looking car. But I believe there was 11 made for the car or for the movie. And, you know, they're always making the versions. Like, this is the stunt car, it's the jump car, it's the wreck car, the drift car. And the ones that you want, right, are the hero cars.
Mm-hmm.
They have all the good close-up shots, you know. Mm-hmm. Nicolas Cage walking up to it. So it's got the best paint, and it's got mm-hmm. the interior, and it's got, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of the original hero cars. I think it's number 7 of 11 that were built. It's funny because all the photos you can see are here in LA, but the owners of the car, the collector, is in Germany, and so the car is there. And they didn't list the price, but given how much information they wrote about the car, just pages like a main spread of a catalog for the auction, it's over $1 million. Like they're going to want a lot.
Did they include that the owner in Germany bought it in 2006 for $11,000?
I don't think they're promoting that, even if that was true. And so, but this is one of those things where my question for you is, yes, there's some amount of collectability because it is the car in the movie. But we know that the movie cars, even the hero cars, are nowhere near the quality of what you'd expect, especially for that price range, right? So do you save the money and just go out and buy a really nice, you know, replica for $200,000? Or do you buy this car for $1 million and leave it? Or do you buy this car for $1 million and kind of tighten it up, you know, like freshen it up?
I could see you doing a little Botox on it, but not plastic surgery.
Right.
Number one. Number two, I think it's almost two different people. It's like collector guy, movie fan, whatever, and then someone who wants to go out and drive the Eleanor, do the cars and coffee, whatever. I just feel like this is its own thing, even though it's an Eleanor. I'd be curious if the person that the people that were bidding on it even really were Mustang guys or Eleanor guys.
Yeah.
I would assume no one has an Eleanor or maybe even a Mustang guy, but maybe it's the guy who just lost the bid on the Bullet Mustang, and now he's gonna come in and get the next good Mustang from a movie.
Yeah, like a big movie car. But you're right. Like, what do you do? How do you breathe on it? Like, in my world, you'd say, you know what? Cosmetically, you want to keep it, but it's got like a 351 in it. There's nothing special.
I think you got to go Leno and his Gullwing. I think you have to just stand back.
Just stand back and put it in the collection.
Because there's all those – because what happens is people always come up and they'll go, God, look at the you can tell the vent on the intake is something I've seen at Home Depot for a dryer vent. And they just spray painted it flat black. And then you get to go – that's the way they did it.
Yeah, yeah. It's the movie car. It's,
right.
You know, they got to fudge it a little bit. You know, you'll see, you're right. Even things like that, the vents, you're like, one side's held on with a rivet. The other side's got a sheet metal screw in it.
Right.
And they're like, well, it blew off mid, you know, like everything has to have a story.
Everything has a story. All right. Naples off the hook this weekend. What's that, tonight, tomorrow night?
Yeah.
Tonight and tomorrow night, doing a stand-up and live podcast there. It's almost sold out. Kyle Dunnigan's going to join us on Friday. Always good. Oklahoma City, Bricktown Comedy Club, February 26th, 27th. So good for us. You can say hi there. And go to AdamCarolla.com for all the live shows, and you can check out stand-up on the YouTube page. What do you got, man?
We got some stuff getting posted up onto my social media at Motorator. So give that a follow. Appreciate it.
So, till next time, Adam Carolla for Matt, the Motorator, DeAndrea, saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.